First, back in 1984, scientists discovered the life-threatening virus that causes HIV and led to the AIDS epidemic. The U.S. Health Secretary at the time vowed to find a vaccine within 2 years. Although other treatment methods have been developed, 36 years later, there's still no vaccine to stop HIV. Now the world is facing another deadly virus in COVID-19. Our guest has been reporting on how the decades of research, collaboration, and development to find an HIV vaccine have set the stage for the scientists working now to combat the new coronavirus. Carolyn Johnson is a science reporter for The Washington Post. For the last few months, she's been covering the developments in the search for a coronavirus vaccine. Carolyn, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with that hunt for an HIV vaccine. It turned out this is a very hard virus to vaccinate against. What were some of the challenges?
Well, HIV is a very different virus than the coronavirus. It is devious and has really resisted our attempts to create a vaccine. We haven't been successful there, partially because this virus can integrate into our own cells and hide out there. It mutates. And our own immune systems aren't good at battling it down. And that's in contrast to coronavirus, where many people recover. Most people recover naturally. So we have really good evidence our immune systems can do this. And that gives us hope for a vaccine against it.
In a recent piece, you write that the infrastructure that was developed in the hunt for an AIDS vaccine is really paying dividends for COVID-19 in the hunt to find a vaccine for this coronavirus. Can you talk about some of how that's worked?
Yeah, so a lot of people might hear that this is a parallel to the HIV vaccine and be depressed because we clearly don't have one yet. But the thing is, we've done so much work on HIV. It has taught us so much about the immune system, about how to make vaccine technologies better, about how to run clinical trials, how to do outreach to kind of underserved and marginalized people who you need to recruit into those kinds of trials. All of that infrastructure has been developed for HIV, and now COVID can go fast because we're piggybacking on all of that expertise. So we don't have an HIV vaccine yet, but all the work that we've been doing trying to get to one actually has allowed us to pick that stuff, just ranging from basic science to kind of how you do the outreach to people to get them to participate in clinical trials.
Have researchers in labs that were working on an HIV vaccine, have they actually pivoted? Are those actually some of the same labs that are working now on a coronavirus vaccine?
Yeah, it's huge overlap. So when I talked to one researcher in Boston who has been working most of his career on HIV vaccine research, he had his lab meeting in January. They discussed that day that there was this mysterious pneumonia in Wuhan, China. At that point, there were only 40 cases, I think, which seems mind-bogglingly small now, but they were extremely concerned about it. That night, the Chinese researchers put the genome of that virus online, and his lab started working on it then. And the vaccine candidate that they're working on is directly influenced by the work that they've done on HIV. It uses the same kind of basic technology. It uses a harmless cold virus to ferry into your body like genes that are going to trigger the right immune response. And instead of genes to trigger kind of an immune response to HIV, they're trying to trigger one to COVID.
Carolyn Johnson is with us, science reporter for The Washington Post, looking at the effort to come up with a vaccine for the novel coronavirus that causes COVID-19 and why years of HIV vaccine research, even though they haven't paid off with an HIV vaccine, are actually kickstarting, speeding up the process now. Carolyn, another interesting point you brought up in your piece was that for a while with HIV, they would try one method and then move on to another one. And it sounds like from what you're writing, they're trying a lot of different methods in labs around the world all at the same time.
The amount of energy going into the race to develop a vaccine against coronavirus is really unprecedented. It's not just academic labs or government labs. It's also basically so many companies that are jumping into this. And it is all happening in parallel. That's partially because this virus has really devastated both health and the economy around the world. So it's become just such a big obstacle. Like, everyone wants to develop a vaccine, but it's also because governments have been giving a lot of money to companies to make it financially less risky to jump into this. And that has also just really helped spur lots of different kinds of approaches and scientists into the fight.
We see headlines that, you know, one vaccine or another might be entering, you know, a late stage, getting closer to development. What does that mean as far as where potential vaccines are now and how long they could potentially be in use in the public?
All that depends on what happens in the coming months. So it's the people are making timeline predictions are making them, you know, sort of blind because we haven't even started the trials that will determine whether the vaccine is effective or not. But what's happening is they're scaling up production and manufacturing of many vaccines right now, even though we don't know if they're going to work or not. That's risky because you might have to throw out all that vaccine, but that is something that we haven't had to do before, or we haven't had the opportunity to do before.
And looking at where we are on viruses now, some of the questions that have to be answered, not just does it work, but I guess questions like how long does it work for? And of course, is it safe? Does it have a side effects? Can you talk about the range of questions that have to be answered before a mass produced vaccine starts being given to the public?
These large trials, they're called phase three trials, will go on for months. They will include 30,000 people, and they're going to look for any safety problems. They're going to look for effectiveness, as in, does it prevent infections? Does it make the disease less severe if it doesn't completely protect against infection? And the other thing about vaccines is that they are typically monitored after they're approved through other kind of add-on studies. So even after a vaccine is shown safe and effective, it's not going to end anything because the trials now, I mean, one of the trials is going to like last for 2 years. I mean, the vaccine will likely be shown effective or not before those 2 years are up, but scientists are going to continue to collect data because they're going to want to know things like, how long does the protection from this vaccine last? If it fades, do you need to get a booster? There's just all kinds of questions that are going to be studied in parallel, potentially, with the approval of the vaccine.
We were talking today mainly about vaccines, but I know there are efforts in the works, and I think you've written some about these, to come up with therapeutics, things that treat us if we get COVID-19. What is out there in that kind of research right now?
Well, you've probably heard about remdesivir, which is a drug that is used in hospitalized patients. There is an inexpensive steroid called dexamethasone, which has been shown to be helpful in patients who require oxygen. So these are not treatments for people with mild cases. Well, I mean, so certainly dexamethasone is not. They're still going to be testing others. But the effort to test treatments is also really ramping up because some of the greatest hope is on a class of drugs called monoclonal antibodies. They sort of mimic what your immune system could be doing, but optimize it. And those drugs are also going into large scale clinical trials on the hope that they might be useful both as a treatment and potentially as a short-term prevention. It wouldn't last as long as a vaccine, but it might help prevent the disease, particularly in people who might not respond well to a vaccine, for example, elderly people.
As we wrap up, Carolyn, you've been covering a lot of angles over the last few months when it comes to efforts to prevent or treat COVID. What do you have your eye on right now? What is really standing out to you?
Well, the large clinical trials for vaccines, which will really show whether or not they work, are going to be starting at the end of the month. The first one will start, and those are going to be hugely informative. That's really what we need. I know there's a ton of excitement with every scrap of data that comes out, but can't really tell that much from these early trials. We can know like they didn't really seriously injure anyone. People like might have had a fever, you know. We can know that they had these kind of transient effects, but it's in such a small number of people and they're all really healthy young people. And so we really need to look for the phase three results. And then also the monoclonal antibody studies that are just also beginning are going to be very informative because there's a lot of hope that those might even be faster than a vaccine. And they're going to be essential in any case. If we have a vaccine, it's not going to get to everyone at once. People might still become sick and need treatment. So we're going to need a combination approach either way. But those are two things to look for.
Carolyn, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Carolyn Johnson covers science at the Washington Post. She was with us to share her reporting on how the decades of research for an HIV vaccine has boosted the odds of finding a coronavirus vaccine, hopefully on a short timeline.